Mr. Calla, good morning to you, but before you begin. Make sure everybody is here. Is it Ms. Cusick? And are you going to be the only person arguing today? Oh, I'm sorry, and she is on WebEx. That's Ms. Messerschmidt. Is that correct, Ms. Messerschmidt?
Yes, Your Honor. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Very good. Anybody else arguing on the appellee side of the case? So you're going to split your time 5 minutes and 5 minutes? Are you aware that you've got to keep track of that 5 minutes? Very good. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? And counsel, we appreciate your wearing masks today, but when you present to the court, please remove your masks so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. With that in mind, Mr. Catlett, you may approach and you may proceed.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. Good morning. My name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellant in this matter, Joshua C. Finality of judgments is critical to the purpose of the judicial system. It's essential to provide closure and certainty to the litigants and to society, and it prevents waste of judicial resources. It fulfills the purpose for which courts have been established, namely the conclusive resolution of disputes within their jurisdiction. It is critical for achieving a healthy legal system. Determining finality in a practical way is essential to the achievement of a just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action. A well-constructed, consistent, and certain approach to determining finality.
Sir Catlett, I think this court and many courts have a difficult time with finality, particularly in abuse and neglect cases in juvenile courts.
Okay.
How do you mix finality and the fact that in the real world, kids are abused and family situations change, and it is difficult for an appellate court that hears matters weeks or months after they have been tried, and obviously the world has gone on during that period of time?
No doubt, world continues to turn, but for 120 years, this court has held that a lower court has an unqualified duty to comply with the mandate of a superior court.
So what was the mandate in this case?
To grant Joshua C's motion for temporary physical custody of his son BC, after, quote, establishing with the most up-to-date information an appropriate plan for the transition of BC into Joshua's temporary custody.
What does that imply if an appropriate transition plan can't be put in place?
There is no can't. There's no can't here. There is no evidence of can't.
What does appropriate, what weight does appropriate have in our analysis?
None. This court is not reviewing a plan that was ever actually ordered by the juvenile court. That's the problem. The juvenile court didn't order a plan.
Was a plan ordered by this court?
This court simply said, grant the motion after establishing with the most up-to-date information a plan, an appropriate plan for the transition. So I don't actually know what that means.
So
and Joshua moved this court for rehearing on what, that precise issue. And
was there a plan established by the juvenile court?
No, there was no plan ever established.
Was there a reason why the juvenile court did not establish a plan, or did they articulate a reason?
Not really. The juvenile court apparently decided that based upon an affidavit of Joshua that was offered into evidence at a hearing that was held before this court's mandate was returned to the juvenile court was somehow, I don't know, an invitation?
I beg your pardon. Is there anything in the record that would have disavowed the content of that affidavit, or are there subsequent exchanges with the appellant that would indicate that that which he said in his affidavit did continue to be his position after the opinion of this court?
Were there? I think I understand that question, and I think the answer is no. I think.
So is that correct then, in your view, or in appellant's view, what he said in his affidavit remained his position to this day? Is that correct?
No, it was the position of him on whatever day that he executed that affidavit. I don't even know what day it was. I think it was in April, as this court knows from the record, before there was a mandate returned.
So in what respect does that which was said in the affidavit, has it been superseded by something that the appellant has said with respect to the creation of a plan? What's new?
What's new? So I guess the question is, did Joshua submit a new affidavit after the mandate was returned, disavowing his position in a previous affidavit where he says, I have no intention of taking part in the development or implementation of any plan for the transition?
Well, just to focus a little bit on the now times, your brief says we hesitate to offer a plan. Isn't that correct?
Right. Our position is that this is the juvenile court's job, that it's not Joshua's job to come up with a plan. It's not the department's job to come up with a plan. It's the juvenile court's job to create establishing this plan.
So did they need a hearing to establish that plan?
I don't think so.
Need to hear from the parties or hear new evidence?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Again, Joshua cannot be reforced to relitigate the very issue that he has prevailed on.
So the court had just said, this is the plan, and you had disagreed with it. What would have happened?
Well, I think that Joshua could have docketed another appeal if he was unsatisfied with whatever that plan was. I mean, we don't know what this court meant by that. I guess it's sort of our position that what that meant was just, hey, this is the date that BC goes to live in Joshua's house, you know, or maybe before that date, there's, you know, some, maybe he goes for a weekend, and then maybe the next weekend he goes for 3 days, or I don't know, but that's, I guess, what I think of a plan.
Or the department just drops off the child at the close.
That's what they did with the mother. That's what they did with the mother here. That's the fascinating thing about this, is that in this case, the juvenile court didn't order. Not only did it not comply with the mandate, it placed temporary physical custody of the child with the mother, from whose custody the child had been removed, and never ordered her to cooperate or in the development or transition of a plan, or the implementation of a plan. Never did.
There weren't requirements for her to make the child available, make the home available, make sure the child was still going to therapy.
I think in the order placing temporary custody.
Weren't those the same requirements asked of your client?
Not of the juvenile court. The juvenile court never ordered Joshua to do or not do anything.
They were suggested by the department. And
so what?
Your client said, so I don't participate.
He took the position that the department doesn't run the world, which is the position that he took at the beginning of this case. It's the whole reason that we're here.
Counsel, I'd like to return to your argument about compliance with the mandate. You quoted from language in our previous opinion that is found on page 851 of the opinion. And I have no quarrel with what you quoted there.
But you did not talk about the language which appears in the conclusion of the opinion, which is on page 867 of our opinion. How do you reconcile the language that you quote with the language in your conclusion?
I don't have it in front of me, Your Honor. So if Your Honor quoted it for me, I'm able to answer.
I hate to use your time, but essentially we reverse and remand the cause with directions for further proceedings to develop a transition plan in case number blah, blah, blah. That's the conclusion.
Right. That means that the juvenile court is required to create or establish a plan for the transition of BC into Joshua's custody. That's what the mandate says. That's what the juvenile court is required to do.
So you do not view there as any being any ambiguity. I think it's all.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what plan means. I don't know what an appropriate plan means. That's why we move forward.
Let me ask you this. Do you or your client have any obligation to cooperate with the juvenile court in coming up with a plan?
No, I don't think so. Cooperate? I mean, that's the whole problem. That was the whole reason that Joshua appealed in the first place, was because there was this sort of onus on him to cooperate. You know, he didn't cooperate. He wouldn't cooperate. It's not his job to cooperate. This was a parent. There had been no allegations pertaining to him. There still have not been. That he is not fit to have custody of his child. I am out of time. If the court permits, I'll continue to answer. But no, if the court orders a plan and it requires Joshua to do or refrain from doing something, and he doesn't comply with that, then that might constitute grounds for the juvenile court to order a change in custody of BC. Right? That might.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. So I'm having a little trouble following you, because I think that the tenor of one of your recent answers is that appellant doesn't need to cooperate in the development of the plan, that the court should just impose a plan, but you don't want the court to impose plans because it's too imperious. So which is it? The court can just write a plan and then you'll have an issue joined for another appeal?
I've never said that any plan imposed would be imperious. The problem was the juvenile court itself never ordered a plan. The department wanted Joshua to do and to not do certain things. The department is not the court. That's all I ever said. Order a plan. Order a plan. Do what this court says. Order a plan. And then we'll see whether Joshua is okay with that, you know, for lack of a better word, whether he will do it. But this is all just hypothetical, based upon an affidavit that he offers in support of a motion filed pre-mandate. The only reason he filed the motion was he didn't want this department's motion to go unresponded. I am totally out of time, and I'll submit it with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cusick, good morning to you.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Teresa Cusick and I represent the appellee, Stacy Jones, mother of BC. Today, as I indicated, I'll be splitting my time equally with the deputy county attorney. So I'll take 5 minutes for my argument and Ms. Messerschmidt will take the remaining 5 for her argument. Today, we are asking that this court affirm the decision of the separate juvenile court of Lancaster County. This court is obviously already familiar with the parents involved in this case, Joshua and Stacy, as well as their son, BC, due to previous appeals by Joshua to this court. And in November of 2020, this court disposed of those appeals, issuing an opinion in re interest of AA. And this court ultimately did reverse the juvenile court's order, denying Joshua's motion for temporary placement of BC, and remanded the cause with directions to grant Joshua temporary physical custody after establishing, with the most up-to-date information, a transition plan of BC into Joshua's temporary physical custody.
If I may interrupt, I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. Harkening back to the first question that the chief asked opposing counsel, isn't it the case that two things can be true, that there can be a mandate from this court while simultaneously the juvenile court exercises its continuing jurisdiction based on the input of recent facts? Do you agree with that?
Correct. I would agree with that.
Is that what happened here?
I do agree that that's exactly what happened here. This court directed the juvenile court to take into consideration the most up-to-date information on BC and on Stacey's rehabilitative progress. And as this court's already noted, things changed very quickly in juvenile court. Benjamin is now 2 years older than he was when the juvenile case was originally filed. And the court took into consideration that the transition plan that this court directed be implemented could not be cooperated with if the parent who that transition plan was directed towards, Joshua, was unwilling to cooperate with the transition plan. And Joshua expressed on numerous occasions that he was not willing to cooperate with the transition plan.
Did you hear my question to your opponent about the language in our opinion at page 851 contrasted with the language at page 861? Do you think there's any ambiguity in the remand instructions which were given?
I will just, I mean, I'll note, I have the opinion in front of me, but I think this court instructed that a plan could be a reasonable intrusion of limited duration. And I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to.
No, that's separate language, but you can refer to that if you wish.
We believe that that while Joshua had right to care and custody of his child, that the state has an ongoing jurisdiction, the court has an ongoing jurisdiction to ensure BC's best interest, and the state has a parent's patriot interest, and that if a transition plan could not be effectuated, then we need to look at what is in BC's best interest. And what was in his best interest was to be placed with his mother, Stacy, who was willing to cooperate with the transition plan. And a transition plan was ordered for Stacy and included the same 5 conditions that Joshua was ordered to or offered to cooperate. First was reasonable access to the ward. Second was the ability for the department to do a walkthrough of Joshua's residence to ensure that it was still in a safe and stable condition for the ward to reside in. Third was the ability for the assigned caseworker to be able to talk to Joshua regarding BC, so long as BC remained a state ward. Fourth was insurance that BC's therapy would continue, and then any identification of barriers to that therapy continuing. Then the final condition was BC's enrollment in school. And so those same 5 conditions were proposed to Stacy, and she had actually 2 additional provisions in her transition plan. The first was that she cooperate with random drop-ins into her home. And the second is that she would participate in a family therapy session between BC's foster parents at the time, and then BC's therapist. And ultimately, Stacy did cooperate, and BC was placed in her care in June of 2021, and BC's remained in her care since that time.
The premise of your opponent's argument seems to be that the department's promulgation of what it thinks is a reasonable plan is not binding or indeed effective or have any effect whatsoever until a juvenile court adopts the plan. Do you agree with that premise, or do you disagree? And if you disagree, why do you disagree?
Well, I will note that the juvenile court did review that plan and found it to be a reasonable intrusion of limited duration. So I believe the court made the sufficient findings that the plan that was proposed to Joshua through the department was an appropriate transition plan.
And did the court order Joshua to comply with that plan?
The court did not specifically order him to comply with that plan because I believe efforts to order him to do that would be futile. He expressed in a sworn affidavit that he wasn't going to cooperate with a transition plan. And we had a hearing a month after that affidavit was offered at a hearing. Joshua made no efforts to clarify the record, to ask the caseworker about Joshua's updated stance. The position that he was not going to cooperate was what was in front of the juvenile court. And I don't believe it would make sense for the juvenile court to make futile efforts, especially when, again, the issue before the court was what is in BC's best interest.
Does Stacy, mom, have as much claim legally, constitutionally, as dad, Joshua?
Yes, I believe so. And I think it's important to note that even this court acknowledged in NRA Interest of AA that at the time of BC's removal, she was the de facto custodial parent, and placement with a non-custodial parent ought not create an unnecessary hindrance at reunification with the custodial parent, which was Stacy. I see I'm out of time. Unless there's any additional questions, I'd ask the court affirm the decision of the Separate Juvenile Court of Lancaster County.
Thank you very much. Ms. Messerschmidt, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Haley Messerschmidt. I'm a deputy county attorney with the Lancaster County Attorney's Office representing Appalachia State of Nebraska. Today, I ask this court to affirm the juvenile court's order dated May 18th of 2021, placing custody of BC with his mother. As this court is well aware, it held an in re interest of AA back in the end of last year that temporary physical custody of BC should be placed with his father appellant after establishing a transition plan with the most up-to-date information, and that temporary physical custody with a non-custodial parent ought not create an unnecessary hindrance to efforts of reunification with a custodial parent. In order to develop an up-to-date transition plan, the court held a hearing in both April as well as May of this year. And during that hearing, it was determined or discovered through affidavits as well as other means, testimony, that appellant was unwilling to cooperate with a transition plan. A transition plan that this court seemed to imply was a prerequisite for placement of BC with his father. Essentially saying after establishing a transition plan, it would have been futile to order a transition plan that appellant was unwilling and to cooperate with and had indicated on numerous occasions. Additionally, at that informational hearing, it was learned that BC's mother, Miss Stacy, had done numerous services, dialectical behavioral therapy, intensive family reunification, had various evaluations, parenting classes, and essentially put herself in a position to reunify with BC. As this court held, yeah.
A moment ago, referring to the court's opinion, you used the phrase "seemed to imply." Are you conceding that there was some ambiguity in the instructions in our mandate?
I don't know that there was necessarily ambiguity. When I say seem to imply, I mean the fact that this court said after ordering a transition plan, which implies that a transition plan is necessary. I don't know that there was ambiguity in this court's opinion.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller Lerman. Could I refocus on what's in front of us? The assignment of error as assignments of error or error, as I understand it, is that the father claims that the trial court didn't follow the mandate, and that the father understands the mandate was order a plan, no more, no less, right? And then we'll see if we like it. That was the failing, I believe, that the father is claiming on appeal. There, I don't see an assignment of error that the other thing that the court did, which was placing the child with the mother, was erroneous or not based on evidence. So I think perhaps we need to narrowly focus on, did the trial court do that which this court ordered?
I believe the trial court did do what this court ordered. As my co-counsel, Ms. Cusick, pointed out, a plan was put in place for BC's mother to have transition of BC into her care. So a transition plan was actually ordered. Additionally, I think ordering a plan or a transition plan of BC into appellant's care would have been futile given his numerous statements that he would not cooperate with any sort of a transition plan.
Do we have propositions of law that allow a trial court to disregard a mandate if they conclude it's futile? Is there a futility principle of law out there?
I don't know that there is. I'd have to do some research into that. I don't know that the trial court, or I would argue that the trial court did not disregard or not follow the mandate in this case. The mandate was to follow the opinion of this court, and this court indicated that temporary custody with father, temporary placement with the father, should not hinder reunification efforts with the mother, and that's exactly what happened. We got to a point where reunification was able to occur.
Did our court leave open the option for the optional plan of moving towards reunification with the mother?
I think it did when it said that temporary physical custody with a non-custodial parent should not hinder efforts towards reunification with a custodial parent.
If the passage of time occurred between when the appeal was first filed and the opinion came out that reunification was now appropriate, would that have been allowed? Is that allowable for the court to do?
Yes, I believe so.
And since the fact that the child is now with the biological mother, and that in theory removes the constitutional parental preference issue, does that make this issue moot?
Potentially, yes. I mean, the opinion in right interest of AA was based on parental preference doctrine. We are no longer looking at a placement between a foster parent and a biological or legal parent. We're now looking at an issue of placement between two parents, one of which was a custodial parent with whom BC was then reunified, and the other was a non-custodial parent. If you have no further questions, I want to thank the court for their time today and ask that they affirm the decision of the lower court that I'll submit.
Thank you very much, Ms. Messerschmidt. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
I know, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you for appearing both in person and by WebEx. That concludes arguments in In Re Interest of AA. So, counsel, you are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Pope versus Department of Motor Vehicles.